The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Morning, glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. It's Hugh Hewitt on Thursday, July the 22nd. I'm on my penultimate day of the show before a two-week break lies ahead of me, and I'm going out to California just to enjoy a little bit lower temperatures, although there's a lot of drama in California. I'll be writing for the Washington Post about it, and I may have to break in and do a couple of special reports with Colonel Kurt Schlichter sitting in for me next week, and then Ed Morrissey and Mark Davis the week thereafter. L.A. County is in the midst of a huge coronavirus spike. The unvaccinated throughout the country are finding themselves sick because the Delta variant is something we call virulent, meaning it's just going everywhere. It's very, very contagious. If you have managed to escape the virus yet and you're not vaccinated, I think the odds are you are going to get it. About half the country is fully vaccinated. If we were at 75 to 80%, it would break down the chain, but there are just too many people running around without a vaccine so that the Delta variant is going to run. And this big spike in LA is the lead story on the Los Angeles Times. Now, normally I don't begin my morning with the Los Angeles Times, but I'm looking there because there are also these incredible fires, the mismanagement of California forests and Oregon forests and Washington State forests have continued, and there are these massive fires in Northern California, and they're probably going to spread down to Southern California as the Santa Anas kick up. I'll check with Dwayne in just a moment. The other big news is, of course, the recall is September 14th. There will be two questions on the ballot. Should Gavin Newsom continue as governor? He scheduled it early because he did not want California parents to go back and find that their schools were going to be closed, but that's what's going to happen. I see what the teacher unions are doing. And two developments in that. Kevin Falconer, the former mayor of San Diego, considered by many to be the front runner, though there is no reliable polling. Boy, after this week's poll story by Dan Balls in the Washington Post showing polling to have been the worst it has been in 40 years on the state level. No one should be trusting any poll about Gavin Newsom coming in or staying out. It's just impossible to poll a turnout model. Everybody who's upset with Gavin Newsom is going to come to the polls. Who's going to come in first on the second question? That's a tightly fought contest. Larry Elder, my former colleague on the Salem Radio Network, he has now left because he has felt a calling. I'll talk to Larry. I'll talk to all the candidates, including Kevin Falconer today, all of the serious candidates. I will talk to them in the course of the next 2 weeks because I think all of America is going to be deeply, deeply interested in whether or not a big blue state governor who botched COVID, who botched public education, who botched spending and PPP, and who have not done anything about drought or infrastructure, paralyzed. California has been paralyzed by just 10 years of Jerry Brown and Gavin Newsom. I think they're going to rise up and throw Gavin Newsom out. I have no idea who's going to win. I'm not going to be involved in moderating debates, and so I'm not going to be involved in endorsing anyone, but I'll bring everyone along and ask them all the same question. I can be meticulously fair. But Larry Elder had been tossed off of the ballot by some, by that know-nothing, no-name Secretary of State. They're afraid of Larry juicing turnout, obviously, and not just in the African-American community, but across the spectrum, because Larry is a great and inspirational figure. His life story is very inspirational. If you've seen his movies, if you've read his book, if you've listened to his show for decades and decades, he's ubiquitous in California. They didn't want him on the ballot. They tried to keep him off. He was ordered onto the ballot. At the same time, Kevin Falconer wanted accurately to record his title as former mayor of San Diego, and they wouldn't let him put that on there. I don't know what his, I'll ask him today what his title will be. He's coming on today in the last segment of the show. But it's going to be a big race. It is going to be a serious race. At the top is Doug Ossie, a former congressman, Larry Elder, and Kevin Falconer. John Cox, a former Republican nominee for governor. Caitlyn Jenner is a serious factor in the race. Kevin Kiley, who led the recall petition gathering drive. Kevin Kiley is a serious figure in the race. All of them will be invited on the Hugh Hewitt Show, as I'm sure they will be on every talk show throughout California, and the debates will tell us a lot. But Right now, the media, the mainstream media, the blue bubble media, the Los Angeles Times and the Sacramento Bee, they all want you to believe there's no race and Gavin's going to coast in. That ain't true, friends. This is a Prop 13 moment. Now, you have to be old enough. I moved to California for the first time in June of 1978, in the immediate aftermath of Prop 13. And I really didn't know anywhere else in the country what was going on. And indeed, the people in California did not see it coming. It is the now famous cap on property taxes rising because, as is happening now throughout the United States, I mean throughout the United States, home values in California 40 years ago were going through the roof. They were going up 10, 15, 20%, in some places 50% a year, and property taxes had no cap, and people were losing their homes. This is going to be the same thing that happens in the United States as property values go up and the assessors run around and they say, well, your house, I did a story yesterday out of the Wall Street Journal about Star, Utah, where houses have doubled in price in 3 years. Well, people move into a house and the property taxes are, say, $4,000 a year, and they save via escrow accounts, et cetera, for that $4,000. And then all of a sudden, the assessors, you haven't done anything, you haven't changed, you haven't doubled your salary, you bought the house, and you may be stretched a little bit to get the house, and your property taxes double. Well, you revolt against the state tax regime, because property tax is not a good way to run the state. Everything should be user fees, but that's another story. So we're going to see Prop 13s everywhere. Well, Prop 13 stunned the political class, and it didn't poll very well. And I'm here to tell you, there are no Howard Jarvis figures in California anymore. He was the father of Prop 13. But there are a lot of people in California who really, really, really don't like Gavin Newsom, who's a wonderful guy, by the way. I think he's a fine guy. He's just a little overwhelmed, a lot overwhelmed by homelessness, by COVID, by economic issues, by people like me who left the state for a variety of reasons, including the unbearable tax burden on ordinary people, and especially public education falling apart in what used to be one of the great university systems in the world, one of the great state college systems in the world, one of the great community college systems in the world. It's falling apart. So Larry Elder is on the ballot. I don't know what we're going to call Kevin Falconer, but he'll be on today, as will be, by the way, Michael Scheer of the New York Times. I want to catch up with him about what's going on in the White House. The biggest story nationally is that Nancy Pelosi is attempting a coup in the House of Representatives. The House of Representatives has run the same way since it began. It divided into parties almost immediately. And soon it evolved into a majority leader and a minority leader, but on top of them all with the speaker. The speaker has never been nonpartisan as they are in the British Parliament, but they have always respected party rule of their own caucuses and committee assignments, etc. Nancy Pelosi, having lost the effort to get an independent commission established for January 6th, the insurrection on January 6th, that didn't get through the Senate because it was a not fair piece of law, and therefore it's languishing. She decided to put together her own committee. Again, that's her prerogative as the Speaker of the Majority Party. She usurped one of the positions on, it's not a fair split. Normally, it would be 13 members, 7 Democrats, 6 Republicans. The leader of the Republicans would name the 6. Speaker Pelosi took 8 of the seats and named Republican Liz Cheney. Now, I have a lot of respect and admiration for Liz Cheney. People kind of thought about that for a while. They didn't like the precedent of the Speaker putting a member on, but they overlooked it. And Kevin McCarthy named 5 other members, including ranking minority member Jim Banks, a friend of mine from Indiana, who is a relative newcomer, but he is the largest elected member of a caucus in the House of Representatives. Jim Banks leads the Republican Study Committee. He has broad and deep support in the House caucus. And then 4 other people to go along with Liz Cheney. And Nancy Pelosi vetoed Jim Banks and Jim Jordan. And the Republicans are out. Never before even considered. The most radical thing by a person who is alleged to be investigating radical behavior. Nancy Pelosi never misses a chance to miss a chance to be hyper-partisan and destroy bipartisanship. There will be no panel. There'll be a Nancy Pelosi circus. And I guess Liz is going to attend that, but it's going to be a circus. It's got no legitimacy, and no minority party would ever accept a majority party doing what they did. Senate Republicans, as predicted, as I told you, blocked an infrastructure bill yesterday, and that was especially predictable and may come back next week. Kurt Schlichter will tell you about that when I am out. Republicans are threatening to hold up the debt ceiling. Actually, They have no authority to hold up the debt ceiling. The Democrats run everything. They can put the debt ceiling into reconciliation. Pass it tomorrow with 50 votes. Easy to do. So don't believe anything that you read there. The state's got $26 billion out of the opioid settlement. And I'll talk to you a little bit after the break about that. And in Surfside, Florida, another condo building has been evacuated. Sometimes a disaster like that wakes up a lot of people to a lot of disasters that could happen. That particular condo building is 70 years old. They've decided to tear it down and build a new one, which, you know, kind of makes sense when buildings get to be 70 years old and live on the ocean. Don't go anywhere, America. A lot more today on the Thursday edition of the Hugh Hewitt Show, including Kevin Falconer, former mayor of San Diego, maybe an ex-governor of California. Stay tuned. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Thank you for joining the Hugh Hewitt Show. I'm joined by Dr. Michael Oren, former Israeli ambassador to the United States. He is now in Israel. Hello, Dr. Oren. Good morning.
Good afternoon. Good morning. You too. Right.
I've got two questions for you. The first has to do with the return of COVID to Israel. The Delta variant is surging. California's got, Los Angeles County's has had to go back to a mask mandate. Half of America isn't got two vaccines or fully vaccinated with one J&J shot, and therefore it's just ravaging the unvaccinated. India's got 3 million dead. What's the situation in India, in Israel?
In Israel, we have the highest level of infection since last March, about 1,400 people per day. But the number of people who are actually hospitalized, the number of people who are being ventilated is very, very low. I think there's a fear among the health experts that this can get out of control very, very fast. If we don't clamp down now, we'll lose that control. But the Israeli people are very nervous. You know, we're finally getting back on our feet, beginning to recuperate from the losses of 2021 and 2020. And here we are, you know, getting slapped down again. And, you know, speaking personally, a lot of my work is international. I need that airport open.
Well, you know, it's interesting to me that I wrote a piece for The Washington Post this week. We don't know what the epsilon variant will be like or any variant up to Omega, but it is entirely possible that one of them evades the vaccines unless we shut it down now. It could go very bad on us. We're just sort of assuming the worst is behind us. That's a human sort of natural bias towards best case scenario. But there is no best case scenario. There's only what's going to happen, Michael. Do the Israelis get that?
We get it, but I think there's a sense here, especially among young people, is that young people are paying the price for elderly people, and that this is a new reality, and we're just going to have to live with it. And I hear that from, you know, young Israeli after young Israeli, and not just from the young people.
But when you talk to them, do they realize that the variants are out there, that the 1918 influenza got much, much worse over the summer of 1918? It killed young people. It killed children. It killed young adults in the army. Do they get that? That if it mutates,
no,
it's bad?
No, they do not.
Wow.
And, you know, masks are back here. They don't. And you're dealing with a very tired population. And there was at one point close to a million people out of work. And now they've just recovered. You know, what if you do it the first time, you know, you have a sense of camaraderie, of togetherness, solidarity. By the fourth time, that sense of solidarity has really been eroded.
Now, who is the new health minister in the Bennett government?
The new health minister is a good minister. He comes from the left, Kathleen Nissen. You know, I think that is not the issue. I think it's not coming from the health minister. It's coming from the health professionals. And I think that the health professionals are very scared. And I understand it. You take a step back, you understand it. This could get out of control very quickly. We can go from
I'm just wondering if they're doing a good job.
15,000.
Are they doing a good job communicating risk to the public? Not fear, but
they
risk.
Not. They are not.
All right. That's the same way in the United States.
Hey,
second
question. I don't understand it. Believe me, a lot of people out there aren't getting it.
Yesterday, I met for the first time Qatar's ambassador to the United States, Sheikh Michel Thani. And we talked a little bit. My conversations are, of course, confidential when I talk to anyone like that. But I heard a little bit about their view of the Gaza situation. What's your view right now? Will there be a resumption of aid? Is there an enduring ceasefire there?
I think there'll be a resumption of aid. I think there'll be a enduring ceasefire. I think that, you know, that Hamas realized that even though it won the popularity war, there's nothing really to gain at this point from renewal of hostilities. Israel does not want to renew hostilities, especially as we're clamping down again on on COVID, I think it's going to hold. And they'll find some way of getting aid to the civilian population, and some way Hamas will find a way of getting its hands on that aid. That's just the way it works.
Now, yesterday, I spent a half hour with Ernie Moniz, the former Secretary of Energy, talking about the new JCPOA. He, of course, negotiated JCPOA-1. Very polite conversation. I always, of course, ask questions. It's not a debate. He believes the election of a hardliner might make it easy to actually reach a deal because there will be clarity from both sides. No more. There are moderates in Iran. Well, there aren't any moderates in Iran. This guy's a killer. And he's in line with Ayatollah Khamenei. What do you make about that? If you get the worst part of their regime, if you can make a deal with them, that's more possible than when you've got a mixed up political appearance, even though the president of Iran has no real power.
Yeah, it sounds like Nixon goes to Tehran.
Yeah.
And I'm skeptical because, you know, the Maoists and the Soviets, they weren't jihadists. And in Soviet and Chinese communism, at base, there was an element of logic and an element of flexibility because you're dealing with an ideology and not a theology. There's no flexibility here with religion, no flexibility with Shiite Islam. And I think that you're going to get a hard line, you're going to get a hard line. And by the way, I never bought into the whole hard line.
Neither did I. But
there was
but
like, that, who smiled and who didn't smile?
Yeah, that Band-Aid's been ripped away, right?
Hard line is anybody.
Yeah, but that Band-Aid's gone. No one believes that anymore.
Good to hear. But no, I guess the only reason the JCPOA wouldn't be renewed is because the Iranians somehow overplayed their hand. And they haven't usually. They're very smart. They aren't the Palestinians.
We will see. I just can't believe we're going to come away. Well, I didn't think Nord Stream 2 would be approved either. It's an appeasement presidency. We'll have to wait and see. Dr. Michael Oren, follow him on Twitter, Dr. Michael Oren. Thank you. I'm coming back. Hour number two, America. Stay with us. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. Coming up next hour, J.D. Vance and Kevin Faulkner. They're both in big races. J.D. wants to be the next senator from Ohio. Kevin Faulkner wants to replace Gavin Newsom as governor. I'm joined by Jim Talent, who is no stranger to elections. But before I go to the question of the JCPOA 2.0, Jim, in the last segment, I was asking people if they bought a car because the president last night said this. Let's play this for Senator Talent. President Biden on buying a car.
First of all, the good news is the economy is picking up significantly. It's rational when you think about it. The cost of an automobile is kind of back to what it was before the pandemic.
All right. So, Senator Talent, that's nuts. Callers have confirmed that's nuts. So when the president is coherent, he's out of touch. You know, a mistake like that is kind of a bad mistake. It's George H.W. Bush not knowing what the price of milk is.
Yeah, if anybody was watching, I think most Americans probably gave it a miss. He's focusing on the production end. The problem is the Fed's increased the money supply over the last year by what, about 30%?
Yes.
They just added zeros, which is the modern equivalent of printing money. And there's no way the economy is going to increase production enough to cancel out the inflationary effects of that.
And I've just got regular callers calling in, paying $10,000 more than a car they bought the previous year with fewer miles. The president doesn't know. When do you think the last time Joe Biden bought a car is, Senator Talent?
Oh, probably, what, 40 years ago? Now, you know what? I don't know.
I don't know
he
either.
He probably did when he was in the Senate, but he hasn't for a while, and certainly not in the last few months. I mean, my wife told me a couple of weeks ago that here in St. Louis, that they were, you'd go in to buy a car and they'd actually tell you they were increasing the sticker price. In other words, the sticker price was not the price, which I've, in my 64 years, I've never heard of.
Neither have I. So, the sticker price is the starting point to see if you're actually a sentient being or if you just pay it.
Right, exactly. I mean, who pays the sticker price? Well, they don't anymore either. They pay more than that.
Yeah,
and
Dwayne,
we know what's happening with housing. You know, I laugh about it, you, but the problem here is, even if the Fed had the will to do something, what do? They increase interest rates. Well, what happens to the interest payments on the federal debt then?
Oh, my gosh.
This has been a problem for years.
It's why the time bomb is out there. Speaking of bombs, I want to bring up my conversation yesterday with Dr. Ernie Moniz. Now, he is a genius. He's, you know, the PhD from Stanford and a wonderful guy. And everybody likes Secretary Moniz, who's Secretary of Energy under President Obama. But he was at the JCPOA table
And he thinks a deal is doable again, and he believes there ought to be an international supply of low-enriched uranium, which is a good idea. But he made this argument. People can listen to the whole interview at the interview with Hugh Hewitt, and they should, because he's a smart, reasonable Democrat. He argues that now that we have clarity that everyone's a hardliner in Iran, the supreme leader, the new president's a killer and a hardliner, that it's easier to get to a real deal when there aren't any pretend moderates. What do you think about that, Jim Talent?
I don't think it's going to be. I think the Iranians are playing us, Hugh. I mean, this is the classic negotiating tactic. You come to some kind of deal, and it's interesting, isn't it, that the Iranian parliament knows what it is, and Congress evidently doesn't.
No, right? We don't. No.
And then you submit it. Oh, I'm sorry, we can't do it. In other words, you're negotiating with people, and then they take it back and say no. And now they're going to, now that our people are all caught up in the logic of negotiations and got to have a deal, they're going to demand more from them. We're being played. And everybody knew that was going to happen. No, look, you're right about Dr. Meneses. He is a genius. And what he's doing in terms of low enrichment nuclear fuel and energy banks is a very good thing to do for a lot of reasons. But this has never been about the Iranians building a nuclear energy industry. Dude, they're sitting on all that oil. They can't manage that.
Well, and now, you know, the Emirates have nuclear power. They've got the gold standard. And so you might want to have a backup just so you can sell your oil. It makes a lot of sense for diesel, which is so energy intensive. But that's not what's going on here. They're trying to get a bomb.
They want a nuclear weapon.
Yeah.
I mean, what do we think? The mullahs are worried about climate change, so they're trying to shift to nuclear energy. The whole thing is laughable, you. I mean,
I got to ask you, because you were a member of the House. In your knowledge, has a speaker ever vetoed a membership of a committee by the minority?
No, I saw that. No, it's very, very bad. Yet another really important norm is evidently going down the tubes. And the minority has as its prerogative the right to pick its own committee members. It's always been that way in the Congress. I really, if I was capable of being shocked anymore, I would have been shocked seeing that. You just can't do that. And of course, it's going to bounce back and hurt the Democrats. I mourn at what I'm seeing happening to that institution. I actually have some respect for it, having served there, and I liked it. And it's just wrong to do that. Banks, he's an outstanding member. And Jordan, he's more controversial, but he's a very hardworking guy. And they represent an important point of view. So it's just the wrong thing to do.
I think Jim Banks could have adopted as his model Dick Cheney as lead minority member on Iran-Contra, and they would have had a good, productive session. Nancy Pelosi doesn't actually want that. But I just wanted to be – you were shocked. I just wanted to get that on the record.
Oh, yeah. You. I was capable of being shocked anymore. But the first thing I thought was, have I ever seen this? I cannot remember in close to 30 years ever having seen it.
Nancy Pelosi, a lame duck speaker, destroying everything on the way out. It's remarkable. Jim Talent on Twitter, @JimTalent. Thank you, Senator. I'll be right back. America, J.D. Vance running for Senate. Kevin Faulkner wants to be the next governor of California. We're up next hour on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Brought to you by ReliefFactor.com. $19.95 gets you started on ReliefFactor.com. I talk about it three times in my daily show. At the bottom of the first hour when I take it, and then in hours two and three when I remind you to take it, depending on when your commute begins, because ReliefFactor.com works. It's the only supplement I've taken in 30 years of broadcasting. I've declined every other opportunity to take a supplement, and I'll tell you why. Because ReliefFactor.com actually works. I carry in Curcumin and Resveratrol Omega. Temporary relief for the relief of minor aches and pains. Temporary support for the relief of minor aches and pains. And you can't do better than that 3-week starter pack, $19.95.